Hello and welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Show. I'm here today with Dr. Sarana Miraz. Dr. Miraz is a board-certified dermatologist for the Northern Bay Area. And today we're going to continue our conversation on the importance of the microbiome and its effect on the skin. Many of you might ask, well, why am I talking to a dermatologist about the microbiome? So I'm going to let Dr. Miraz tell you why she's an expert on this very subject. Sarana, welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Show. It's such a pleasure to have you back here again today.
Thank you, Angela. It's such a pleasure to be here today. I appreciate your time. Yeah, so let's just kind of dive into the microbiome, nutrition, nutritional supplements, why they are important to the skin. And this really shouldn't be a surprise to a lot of people. You know, if a patient with cardiovascular disease went to a cardiologist and was, say, just given prescription for a statin or a blood pressure medication, there was no discussion about nutrition, exercise, things that could now in this day and age, I think, enhance, optimize the microbiome. I think that most people would agree that that would be very incomplete care. Well, the skin is a huge organ. It's probably our largest organ, unless you count the microbiome as an organ, which may be even larger. But these aspects, the microbiome, nutrition, are equally as important to good skin health. So rather than just, you know, treat a patient with, say, lasers or chemical peels or fillers or what have you, I think it's important to include these nutritional aspects and microbiome discussion into our care for patients.
You know, and I totally agree with you. And I think that it's such a great analogy what you just used, because, you know, you kind of think back to cardiovascular care 50 years ago compared to now. You know, or you compare, you know, obesity 50 years ago, which there wasn't quite so much, but compared to now, and how we, not we, I am not a doctor, but, you know, physicians and medical health experts guide patients to the consideration for lifestyle in addition to medication or surgery. And I agree with you, I think, with on the skin and the microbiome, and the skin being the largest organ, and if the microbiome on the skin, which we now from previous discussions have, you've explained how there is an inner microbiome and an external microbiome, which are two very different and completely, you know, living organisms within us and within us. And we've touched on the blue zones in the past too. And the blue zones is something, as you have explained, it does complete that circle of lifestyle. So can we talk a little bit perhaps about particular skin issues that are, you think, occur as a result of the microbiome or the imbalance or dysbiosis of the microbiome?
So we discussed previously things that can optimize the microbiome, and a lot of these are internal: our diet, exercise, don't smoke, don't drink too much, get enough sleep. I would say that additional things, of course, you know, try to avoid unnecessary antibiotics. Of course, antibiotics can be life-saving in situations, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't take them ever, but long-term unnecessary antibiotics would be just not well advised. Good oral hygiene is important. I think another thing that optimizes the microbiome is avoiding, when possible, acid blockers. And acid blockers, so things that reduce the acid in the stomach, many of these are over-the-counter now. Patients are taking them left and right. They really do have a disruption on the microbiome. Mm-hmm. Additionally, regular human interaction with other human beings, I think, is good. Interaction with animals, having a pet dog, having a cat, spending time in nature, et cetera. So these are all things that we can do to optimize our microbiome. And very, very importantly, along with the antibiotics, we don't think about food sources, but highly processed foods contain lots of chemicals that are basically act like an antibiotic or an antimicrobial to kill off, keep things from growing in food. So avoiding what I call FFs, so fake foods, highly processed foods, which really have, I would say everybody has their own diet. And I don't want to, you know, say, oh, one diet is better than the other. But I will say that I think most people can agree that avoidance of the FF or fake food diet is a good idea for probably every human being and our pets as well. So all these things to optimize the microbiome actually have play a huge role in how we metabolize nutrients. And some of these nutrients are so important for our skin health and really make the difference between, you know, aging well and not aging well. And not just our skin. By the way, things that help our skin to age well generally help our blood vessels to help age well, which helps our heart, which helps our brain, which helps basically every organ in our body. So we don't have to really separate these so much. We can use the same foods to achieve benefit for the entire human being, the entire body. Now, why does food affect, you know, the health of the skin? What we know is that, you know, between about the ages of 25 and 34, we have the maximum collagen, elastin. Our skin is probably at its peak during those years. And after, you know, 35 and beyond, unfortunately, it tends to be a little bit of a downward spiral. Doesn't have to be such a spiral, but changes occur, and these result in stiffness and degradation and loss of collagen, elastin, what we call the dermal matrix. So kind of the substance that makes up the strength of our skin and keeps it from collapsing down and wrinkling, right? What can we do to avoid this? Well, we can't 100% avoid it, but there are a lot of things that we can do to really minimize and reverse some of these things that are happening. And so I'd like to discuss some of those measures. So we're basically treating from the inside out. And this is a very nice complement to a lot of the great tools that we have in this day and age in aesthetic medicine, where we can, you know, reverse sun damage, spots on the skin or blood vessels or what have you. But treating from the inside out is such an important complement to achieving like optimal skin, in my opinion. So why do a lot of these things happen? Okay, number of things. Internal factors. So again, the lifestyle, I keep going back to lifestyle, but lifestyle is important for our skin as well as our internal organs. Diet makes a huge difference. There's a lot of evidence that things that degrade our collagen, so, you know, there are basically free radicals. Everybody knows about free radicals. These are reactive oxygen species. These are a lot of damaging, kind of bad inflammatory players that literally destroy our skin. And they're doing this silently. We don't even feel it. We don't realize it's happening. Well, why is this happening? Well, everybody knows about the sun. Everybody knows about, you know, don't, because those are really, really damaging. But nobody thinks about food. And food is super important. High levels of sugar in the bloodstream will degrade your collagen. They will create changes in the collagen, the elastin. They make it stiff. They make it break down. They degrade it, make it go away. Other things like advanced glycation end products. So, you know, eating things like that are burnt on the surface, not so good. A lot of this is really damaging to the skin and it's breaking things down. Hormones play a huge role. And I know just saying the word hormone, people, you know, it creates like emotional kind of feelings in people. And I'm not going to get into a discussion on hormones and hormone replacement. I have feelings about hormone replacement in postmenopausal women, which is a huge segment of our population and a huge segment of our population that come in for cosmetic treatment. Huge part of my patient population. So that is a personal discussion. But I will say that there are many, many what we call plant sterols out there. And plant sterols, I think, have tremendous benefit, whether a person is on any kind of hormone therapy or not. I think that these are, the evidence is overwhelming. These are great for our skin. They're great for our hair. They are great for longevity. They're great for prevention of, you know, cancers, not only breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, but other types of cancers internally. And nobody's skin looks great when they're going through, you know, chemotherapy, right? So we want to avoid cancers for so many reasons. So there are many, many forms of plant sterols out there. Although I find that they're very underutilized, both in regards to supplementation and with regards to just diet. So where do we get plant sterols? Where do we get plant sterols? There is an abundance of probably one of the most potent combinations of plant sterols are genistein and didazine. The highest concentration of those are found in soy products. Now, again, another word that probably has everybody is thinking, oh, soy is so bad, soy is so bad. Well, in fact, we see areas of the world where soy is consumed. There's a lot of longevity, a lot of health span. The hair is better. The skin is better. There's a lower risk of cancers. Specifically, you know, if you look at, for instance, Japan, where soy consumption is quite high, there is at least one third less breast cancer there than there is in the United States. Until people from Japan move up to the United States and adapt what I call the SAD diet, which is the standard American diet. Very aptly named, I would say. So when the soy goes away, the rates of breast cancer go up. Women who consume a lot of, and men can get breast cancer, of course, too, but much more common in women, of course. The rate of even those who get breast cancer, they have a higher chance of living with these certain diets. Now, it's some people have reasons that they can't eat soy, and that's fine. Not everybody has to eat soy. There are a lot of sources of plant sterols out there. And there are precursors to these sterols as well. Now, there have been a number of studies, like hundreds of studies, actually, on a lot of these plant sterols. I think the evidence is pretty overwhelming with them. But there's also a big fear about the potential for causing certain types of cancer or worsening certain types of cancer. And I do think that those fears are unwarranted. In fact, I think that the sterols, not only are they good for the skin and the brain and the heart, and prevention of memory problems, et cetera, but they also do help to reduce the risks of cancers. Why is it that it's so, so difficult to prove or disprove this? And the answer is that there are so many variables out there when it comes to diet. It takes such a long time to get results with human beings that, you know, no investigator wants to look at lifespan when their patients may, or the subjects in the study may, outlive the investigator, right? So we do some of these studies on, you know, animals and labs, but not all of those results can be crossed over to people. Some of them can, some of them can't. But the other issue, I think, is, you know, there's been more recently, I think we have a little more focus on food sources and nutrients and food that are important. But the focus really has been in the past several decades on other things, many pharmaceuticals, other ways of addressing disease. And I'm not saying that pharmaceuticals are not appropriate in many situations, but I think it's always appropriate to consider dietary and supplement measures, either in addition to or instead of, in some cases, maybe preventative medicine and health, really truly health care rather than disease care. So I think we are shifting a little more towards health care and not just being so reactive, waiting till people get disease and then treating the problem. So these are all things that kind of encompass the importance of nutrients and supplementation. One thing that's limited, a lot of times with the supplement, it's, you know, there's been an isolation of just one molecule basically out of a food source that is packed into a little pill. And a lot of times that one important molecule is important, but it acts best with everything else. So this gets back to the microbiome. We're going to like turn us back to the microbiome. A lot of these plant sterols actually are much more effective. Their metabolites are more effective, but their metabolites are only available if our gut microbiome is optimized. And in fact, a lot of these plant sterols, we find that in the U.S., where the SAD diet is prevalent, the standard American diet, only 20% of people have gut microbiota that can metabolize some of these super important plant sterols and create kind of an optimized effect. So again, it's just so important that we look at this, you know, microbiome, these trillions and trillions of organisms that are on our skin, in our gut, everywhere, and understand that it's important to take care of them, to optimize them with good lifestyle factors.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the soy, for instance, and I do think it's a perception of, is it safe? Is it not safe? You know, who said what? Did somebody report on dangers of soy, or other people report on benefits of soy? The Japanese lifestyle proves that the point. The Japanese women have beautiful skin. You know, which is kind of what we're here talking about, is the microbiome and the skin. But I feel as well as part of that perception is the misconception or the misunderstanding. And one of the things in the United States, and I think it's worldwide, is food is fashion. So diets are fashionable. You know, it seems like every year or every 2 years, we have a new name for a new diet. So people, you know, they go this direction and they go that direction and they try this and they try that. And many of those diets may include supplements. And as you're saying, the microbiome is not optimal. It can't necessarily, you know, make the best use of whatever is in that particular supplement. How could a person who, you know, has been kind of on the yo-yo diets, and I don't mean dieting for weight loss, because that's kind of a whole other conversation, but dieting for optimal health, when there is, how do we read between the lines as to, out of all of these diets, what is the one that is truly going to benefit us from a health perspective?
Yes. So there are few subjects that are quite as polarizing as diet. And everybody has such strong beliefs about diet. And, you know, a lot of times it's, oh, avoid this, you know, avoid nightshades, avoid beans, avoid this, avoid it. I mean, and in reality, a lot of these things that are deemed as being like such bad actors, because maybe there's one unfavorable thing in it, when in fact, net, you know, these are such net positive things. I mean, nightshades, for instance, are part of the Mediterranean diet. Most people have heard that Mediterranean diet is pretty healthy for the most part. And in fact, it's usually touted as the one of the most healthy lifestyle diets. I was talking about soy, which comes from a bean. You know, we discussed earlier the blue zones, and one of the kind of consistent things among the blue zones is this regular incorporation of beans in the diet. And beans, again, are precursors. They have precursors. They're to these enteral sterols. So these are plant sterols that have very, very beneficial effects. And I think that there's a great, great confusion between pharmaceuticals, you know, hormones, and plant sterols. And I think that they are very, very different. For one thing, plant sterols, you know, have much weaker attraction to our receptors or hormone receptors, but they also tend to have not only attraction, but also what we call some antagonistic or some blocking effects. So because they're balancing these hormone effects, these different receptor effects, they tend to have a much more favorable profile and actually are associated with not just longevity, but health span as well. So living past 100, not just living past 100 in a nursing home drooling, living past 100 with, you know, good cognition, without heart disease, without cancer, with good skin, which is important. What was important? And, you know, beans, again, beans have been reported in some diets as being, or by some, you know, quote unquote experts, as being so evil and bad. But beans, again, have a lot of these plant sterols. And I think this is a consistent across the world. In areas that people are healthier, they consume plant sterols. You know, there are plant sterols in, again, you know, all bean sources, or precursors too, I should say. Basically, they're only really beneficial if we have the right gut microbiome to metabolize them into the really good products. They also help to get rid of a lot of the, you know, basically what are considered kind of the bad actors as far as our own sterols. So not only do they promote healthy changes in the skin, virtually every organ, they help to kind of clean out some of the bad actors, which, you know, kind of brings me to what we call senescent cells, or like what people think of zombie cells. So, you know, with the aging process, we have some of these cells just, they don't die off. They just become kind of inflamed, and they're spewing out inflammatory factors, and they make the cells around them zombie-like. So the biggest risk for one cell becoming a senescent cell is another senescent cell close by. So you can imagine there's a domino effect. And we have concentrated on what are called adaptogens, or, you know, supplement and food sources that help to kind of quash out those bad zombie cells. So the cells that are, we get rid of the bad actors, kind of keep cells that are functioning well and can give us, you know, good health benefits. What gets rid of zombie cells? Well, adaptogenic, there are a lot of molecules in nature that do this. Mushrooms, I will say, which also have a plant sterol, by the way. mushrooms have good adaptogenic qualities. They kill off zombie cells. There are a lot of things with, say, quetiapine, which highest concentration in capers, but well known for, you know, apples have quetiapine and apple D keeps the doctor away, that type of thing. But lots of plant sources have some quetiapine. These are all things that we need to do kind of in concert to promote the good, get rid of the bad, keep things fresh. So it's all about that balance. And this will help our skin to basically keep that elastin, keep the collagen fibrils from breaking down, keep them, you know, healthy and fresh, keep the dermal matrix, glycosaminoglycans, dermal matrix, et cetera, healthy, keep the fibroblasts, which are these cells that make all these products, happy. These are super important, along with, you know, providing a lot of basically what we call phenols, polyphenols, molecules that clean up all these free radicals that are forming on a daily basis. In fact, on a minute by minute basis, these are super important. So again, concentrating on a lot of these things. You know, interestingly, I think about Mark Twain. Mark Twain, I love. He had so many great quotes. And he famously said at one point, you know, when I was 14, my father was so ignorant, I couldn't stand to be around him. But when I was 21, he actually got really smart. I couldn't believe how much he learned in that time. So I think about that, and with that, I think a lot of the, we concentrate on science and well-done studies, but over generations and generations in societies, there are basically, there are food sources, there are supplementation plants, et cetera, that are deemed to be positive and helpful. And, in Peru, maca, which contains, again, plant sterols, maca comes from a root that is grown in the Peruvian highlands. It's been known without, you know, randomized clinical trials, really. I mean, there have been trials in recent years, but for generations and generations before that, it was kind of passed down from generation to generation. Oh, you need to consume your maca in a tea form or in whatever form. And this was just kind of done. You know, certainly in Asia, in all around the world, people have kind of passed down to the next generation things that have worked in many cases. And I would say, in Malaysia, there's a plant called Lobelia pumilia, which it's, they call it Kasi Fatima. So again, plant sterol that is shown to be kind of super beneficial for beauty, for libido, for all kinds of things, because it does, again, contain these plant sterols. And lo and behold, there have been studies done showing benefits with bone, benefits, you know, concrete, beneficial applications to human medicine that correlate with a lot of these findings that people just feel better, they look better, they pass down. So I also think about, the spice trail. So spices, herbs, spices, these are great things to add to our food. Way back 200 years, BC, up to I think about the 1500s, there was this silk spice trail. And amazingly, people without modern transportation traveled thousands and thousands of miles to get spices and other merchandise. I mean, they must have known that these are really, really powerful substances that are worth traveling halfway across the world for, right? So now we have Amazon.
Yes.
They just show up at our doorstep and then we don't even bother to use them, right? So I think it's just really, really helpful to add some spice to your life, right? Add some turmeric, other, you know, spicy roots like ginger, black cumin, sesame seeds, which is not really a spice, more of a seed. Sesames have, just like flaxseed, very high omega-3 fatty acids. They are very powerful plant ligands. And what do plant ligands do? Again, they get in a healthy gut, basically metabolized to these plant phytoestrogens, which again have healthy benefits. So these are all simple things that we could all do, and quite frankly, very, very cost effective. You know, some of these spices obviously can be more expensive than others, but in this day and age, you can buy a huge bag of flaxseed, you can buy a huge bag of chia seeds, of sesame seeds for so little. It will last so long, and the health benefits are so, so powerful that it's such a great investment. What is a better investment than your own health and well-being, right?
You know, you mentioned about the collagen breakdown of the skin and occurring, you know, between the age of 24 and 35 being the optimal skin health, skin collagen, and all of that within the human body. Is there a way, you know, kind of beginning with just the skin, and so inflammation on the skin beginning in teenagers with acne or leading into adult acne, or then, you know, as skin ages over time, and the benefits of many of these ingredients that you talk about that are so important to the microbiome. For those of us that don't really know the true name of that particular compound or spice, is there any way of explaining, again, starting from perhaps the teenager with acne, what can they do internally and externally to reduce that, or the aging process? We chat about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So the plant cereals, I think, they're healthy and helpful for so many conditions. And it's true that I think our collagen is actually maximized between 24 and 35, because basically we've had kind of optimal, quite frankly, we'll call them sex hormones, leading up to that time and during that time. And then, you know, things start to trickle off naturally for most people. But with that, you know, acne can kind of run amok because these plant sterols have both agonist and antagonist activity. They can help to block some of that kind of overdrive that occurs. So they can be quite helpful in the treatment of acne, in the treatment, and then, you know, later on in life with the treatment of hair thinning from what we call androgenic alopecia sources. So there are many, many reasons for hair thinning, but by far and away, the most common that we see is just a genetically programmed hair thinning that occurs. Using these plant sterols, I think, can be very helpful. And there are plant sources that actually block what's called 5-alpha reductase, which is something that is blocked with a lot of pharmaceutical drugs like finasteride, that can be helpful with hair thinning. We know that it's not quite so So simple. But going back to acne, I would say that the other thing that is super important with acne is basically the gut microbiome, believe it or not, because a lot of these more favorable organisms can have a negative effect, or they can kind of kill off some of the forms of what we call propionic bacterium that drives acne. They can affect the, I think, the skin lactic acid levels by as a metabolite. They have a lot of positive effects. So this has been an age-old question. Does acne, you know, does diet affect acne? And again, the studies have been very difficult to perform because there are so many variables. However, I do believe that there is strong evidence that diet does play a role. It may not be enough to treat acne in some cases, but I think it's an important component of treatment. I think it's a really important component of treatment. There's a lot of evidence that, again, high glycemic diets can drive acne. I think a lot of junk food, things that destroy our gut microbiome, are going to drive acne. And we can use, you know, anti-inflammatory type diets to help in the goal of, you know, improving acne, along with the introduction of plant sterols, precursors, which will work a lot better for that optimized gut microbiome to improve acne. So that's a huge one. And that's something we see every day. And there is a difference, I will say, there's a big difference between, you know, teenage acne and what I see in my office every single day, which is what I call adult female acne. Yeah. And adult female acne.
What is the difference that you see? Because I even remember my mom breaking out when she was like in her 40s, and she never broke out as a teenager. Like, she didn't. She was not a teenager with acne. She had beautiful skin, but then she went through a phase of having adult acne and was kind of like, where did this come from?
Absolutely. And I see that literally every day in my practice, every single day. And, you know, a lot of these women who come in, many for cosmetic purposes, say, you know, how unfair is it to get acne and wrinkles at the same time? That's just wrong, right? And I will tell you, if you fall into that category, you're not alone. And what is happening, it's just these shifts in our hormones that is driving this process. And we know that if we, you know, block certain receptors, androgen receptors, that often can be quite effective. The other strategy is, you know, in adding plant sterols, I think, to the diet can also be quite effective. I mean, there have been multiple studies showing that maca root can be helpful. I do think that any of the, you know, beans and other vegetables that are precursors to these plant sterols, mushrooms, et cetera, can have a very positive effect on that adult female acne. The other thing we know is that adult female acne does tend to be often associated with what's called SIBO, so small intestinal bowel overgrowth. Mm. So I always ask about acid blockers. Mm. Acid blockers are a big cause of SIBO. If somebody is on an acid blocker, I'm not telling everybody to just immediately stop their acid blocker. If they're on that for, you know, prevention of bleeding ulcers or what have you, I don't want anybody running out and getting a bleeding ulcer right now. But
at least I would work. Problems.
Yes, yeah, but I would. There are a lot of things that can be done, I think, to optimize the gut flora and reduce people's chance of getting a bleeding ulcer. And I would, of course, refer them to a gastroenterologist. But a lot of people are taking these things on their own, and I think they're doing more harm than good, quite frankly. When you trade one problem for another problem, it just, you know, it begets these things like adult female acne, mm-hmm. and I think a host of other issues. So trying to kind of rebalance the microbiome is super important. And often gets rid of these symptoms that, you know, were the cause of people going on, you know, self-medicating or medicating under the advice of a physician, and really getting to the root problem, which often, again, is that dysbiosis or that imbalance of the gut microbes.
Now, I know we live in a world where everything can be tested, or we can mail in tests, we can order tests, and, you know, do genetic testing online and all of this. But for that woman who is, you know, like finding herself, you know, past that 35 years of age, as the collagen is changing, the hormones are changing, the estrogen levels are changing and all of that, and they start breaking out, what would you recommend be the first thing they do? Would it be diet? Would it be consultation?
So I think there's no downside. There's no downside to diet. And often supplementation, you know, may be helpful in the setting of an optimized diet. So a lot of times we just can't get enough. And I'm not proposing that anybody, you know, take mega doses of anything. So with everything in life, even green leafy vegetables, which, you know, I always say you can't get too much of, but you probably can't. Just balancing, you know, eat all colors of the rainbow. Don't eat the same thing every day. Don't take mega doses of supplementation. So a lot of times supplementation can actually just help boost people over to, you know, a better place. But too much of a good thing, you know, despite what Mae West said about it being wonderful, it really is not. Too much of a good thing is not recommended. So, you know, same thing goes, we discussed a little bit with probiotics. You know, if a lot of people are self instituting probiotic pills and they're taking the same thing every day, and, you know, you basically have a gut full of maybe all straight A students, but no band members, no football players, no soccer players. You want kind of a diverse student body down there. You want a diverse gut microbiome, favorable actors for sure, but lots of different types of them. So you're going to best achieve this with a varied diet, with lots of probiotic sources in your diet. So there are dairy sources, which again, this goes kind of back to the acne discussion. People are so anti-dairy. But fermented dairy actually probably has some very beneficial effects, even with acne. Yogurt, there are a few forms of fermented cottage cheese, kefir, and then your non-dairy fermented foods, which include fermented vegetables, miso, sauerkraut, kimchi, kombucha, tempeh, natto. Again, tempeh and natto have both the soy and the fermentation. So I consider them not just superfoods, but almost super duper foods because they're a double whammy. But not consumed by very many people. But get at least your probiotics and then an array of natural foods. No big foods in the diet. All natural foods.
Well, it's easy to say, like, just cut out all the processed foods, which, some people, it's not as easy because it's more convenient or it feels more filling. So do you have any tips for, you know, how do we really supplement with foods or supplements, you know, to lead us down the right path so we can eventually stop all the processed foods as much as possible.
Yes. So it is tough to go from the standard American diet, I think, to, you know, a healthier diet. You know, for some people, it's a longer road than others. Adding, I think, you know, spices, seeds like flaxseed, chia seed, sesame seed, these are super rich in nutrition, omega-3s, your plant sterols. Those are kind of easy in the U.S. to get, to find in large quantities at a reasonable price. Buying from the produce, you know, buying regularly from the produce department of grocery stores, or going to the farmer's market, or growing things in your garden, depending on where you live and if you have a space for a garden or not, this may or may not be possible. But there's nothing like homegrown fruit and vegetables, period. I would say, and herbs, adding herbs. Herbs generally can be easy to grow. They don't take a ton of space, and they can easily be just kind of picked off and used as you go, you know, during certain months, certain seasons. So take advantage of those periods of time. If you are in a place where you can actually grow things yourself, do that. One simple thing I think that is very cost effective and very, very nutritious, kind of huge bang for the buck, growing sprouts. So you can get a couple of mason jars with a screen top, buy a huge bag of seeds, which will last you a long time, and just make those they're super, super easy. You don't even need a green thumb to make seeds. But, you know, broccoli sprouts have the highest concentration of sulforones, which are very anti-inflammatory and very helpful for so many things, including your skin, including your internal organs. And I think you don't need to worry about contamination and other factors when you're growing them at home. Many years ago, there was, an E. coli contamination with some commercially grown alfalfa sprouts or something that maybe scared people off from sprouts occasionally when things are grown on farms, et cetera. There are bacteria and other organisms that, especially when these are living on the dirt, et cetera. Wash your vegetables, wash things that produce that you get. But when possible, growing things at home is very inexpensive and very cost effective, and you kind of have it available at all times. You don't have to run to the grocery store, the farmer's market is just there. So a lot of these things we can easily incorporate, and when it's right in front of you, I think it's easier to remember to, you know, add it to a salad, add it to a sandwich, add it to on top of your avocado and yogurt and lots of spices, right? A little balsamic and olive oil. These are all super easy, quick, very little, requires very little time. So, you know, for busy people who are working a lot, it just requires so little time and effort to do this, especially when we can get things, you know, the seeds, the mason jars delivered to our house, right? It's so easy right now. We have more access than kings and queens did, you know, a couple hundred years ago. We literally have access to such a greater variety of food, greater variety of food sources, supplementation, that you know, we're just so much richer in so many ways than even royalty, you know, just a few hundred years ago, because of all the conveniences that we have.
I think even in the last decade, I mean, the convenience has become a good convenience. And even, you know, talking about food and diets and trends and fashions and things, I feel there is more of a movement to the plant-based diet, and the more accessibility. If you even look at a grocery store now, it seems the produce aisle was really small compared to all of the rest of the packaged foods. And in many supermarkets, at least here in California, I do see an expansion in the size of the produce availability. And in some markets, there is even the option for organic foods. So you kind of have your pesticide foods, and then you have your organic foods, which we joke, you know, they always cost $2 more. But it's worth it. But at least with our accessibility to non-organics and the ability to clean and cleanse and hopefully wash off pesticides, we still have more availability of things, which could only help with this flora, the microbiome, or overall health. Anything in terms of now topicals, you know, and you know, even in the aesthetics, which we've talked about, there's many different treatments for restoring youthful appearance and different things. But I mean, what about topicals? If the skin is the largest organ and it has its own microbiome, what can we do externally to protect it, to cultivate it, and just help in general?
Absolutely. Yes. The skin being my favorite organ. There are probiotic topical agents available. These have not kind of gone mainstream yet. There are issues, I think, with regards to storage. We have to
deliver.
For organisms to stay alive, they have to be kept in the right conditions, et cetera. And anyway, I think we're at the beginning of a change with that. I would say that prebiotics, a good prebiotic for the skin is moisturizer. So good things will grow on healthier skin. And if we keep our skin moisturized, we maybe stimulate it with some acid, some retinoic acid, some alpha hydroxy acids, etc. That is going to help with our production of collagen, and it's going to stimulate these cells in the skin called fibroblasts. The fibroblasts are super important because they make collagen, they make elastin, they spew out hyaluronic acid into the dermal matrix, what we call glycosaminoglycans. These are basically all the substances that make our skin, thicker and healthier and stronger. As we get older and with sun damage, we see that the skin gets very fragile. And every day I see patients who come in with big, we call purpura, which are these bruises into the skin. And that is due to skin fragility from years of sun and age, and probably, you know, dietary measures over the years. There are things that stimulate those fibroblasts actually to become more productive and again, and basically help what we call the stratum microbium, or that top layer of microbiota on our skin. And, you know, many of these things are things that I mentioned. So basically taking good care of the skin, adding some skin-friendly peptides to the skin, adding exosomes to the skin. These are all things that can be applied topically. Orally, there are things that have been shown to help basically boost these fibroblasts as well. So collagen peptides actually now have been shown in several studies to have benefit with these fibroblasts and with the collagen in the skin. Pycnogenol, which is also called maritime pine bark extract, has good effect in stimulating these fibroblasts. It has effect on the positive effect on this stratum microbiome, or the microbiome on the surface of the skin. Astaxanthin can be helpful as well in type 1 collagen production. A lot of these pycnogenol, astaxanthin, also are effective in basically reducing what we call metalloproteinases. And metalloproteinases are bad in our skin because they are molecules that are breaking down on our collagen, they're breaking down our elastin, they're breaking everything down. And these are stimulated by, guess what, sun exposure. They're stimulated by, you know, smoking, other environmental toxins. And as we age, they actually increase in the skin just naturally with aging. And there are inhibitors of these metalloproteinases that actually gradually decrease. So it's kind of a double whammy. So again, giving ourselves a boost with, say, supplements that can help reverse some of these deleterious effects, I think is super helpful. Now, I don't recommend going out and sunbathing and then popping a few supplements. Obviously, we want to do everything to keep things favorable in our skin milieu. But just living our lives, we're coming in contact with sun through our car windows. We hope to be outside and getting some good exposure to outdoors with sun protection, of course. But just living, even in the cleanest environment, you're going to have insults to the DNA, to their toxins and deleterious chemicals kind of everywhere in our air, in our water, in pretty much everything. Doing what we can to minimize the exposure, of course, is first and foremost, but having tools to kind of clean up what we can't control is also helpful. So a lot of, again, mushrooms actually have very positive effects. You know, dandelion root, glutathione is a huge kind of scavenger of a lot of deleterious molecules. So there are things that we can incorporate into our diet and with supplementation that I think can be very beneficial. Again, the astaxanthin, the pycnogenol, those actually have some scavenger effects as well. There's a Chinese herb called Ouroboros rabum, which is available in some skin care products, also improves the stratum microbiome, also helps with a lot of these positive effects, and is kind of a scavenger of the negative effects, has some energetic activity on the skin as well. I'm not aware of any orally available forms of that in the U.S. at this time, but I doesn't mean they don't exist. I just am not aware of them, but they're available. It is available in some topical products. So those are all things that we can do. I think avoiding products with triclosan. So triclosan was so ubiquitous, and I think it's hopefully going away, but a lot of soaps and dishwashing soaps and shampoo, all kinds of things contains toothpaste, triclosan. I mean, this is just triclosan. It is horrible in so many ways, disrupts the microbiome. And also, I think there's indication that there's some cancer-causing effects. It's just, there's nothing redeeming or positive about it. So avoid products with triclosan, I would say, is a real good idea.
You know, you mentioned earlier about the patients with, I think you called it purpura.
Yes.
And is that what we would have called age spots or liver spots to the hands is
yeah.
or is that different?
The H spots or liver spots are usually what we call solar lentigos. So there are these sun freckles. They're too much pigmentation in one area from sun exposure. So the what happens over time with excessive sun exposure is the melanocytes basically create these spots and dots all over the place. So we get hyperpigmentation in some areas. We get hypopigmentation. There's what's called gut-paid hypomelanosis, where the skin, the melanocytes just kind of put up a white flag and you get these little white spots. But the liver spots are more this hyperpigmentation issue. The purpura, it is really kind of a black purple splotch on the skin. They're very, very common on the forearms and the backs of the hands of the older people. Yes. And unfortunately, people who need blood thinners for one reason or another tend to just live with them chronically. A lot of the older people with fragile skin, they can basically touch something and they get a bruise into their skin. And it's very distressing. The pycnogenol may be effective help with that. There's some evidence that hydroxy acid type topicals can help with that. Probably some of our skin peptide treatments actually help to with that, by again boosting the strength of the skin by getting these fibroblasts or these collagen elastin producing cells that get very lazy and tired as we get older to kind of wake back up and become a little more active over time.
Well, I think as well, the humans that we're living longer, and so the body meant to age and eventually die. I mean, that's just the way it is. So having said that, and as one of, most of us want to live long and we want to live healthy, what?
Yes, no, I agree.
Where do we start with making lifestyle changes in general to create this optimal health, healthy appearance?
I think one of the reasons that we all want to look good is because, you know, when you're healthy, you look better. So disease is not attractive. Right. So I think that evolutionarily, we have, we as a human species have evolved to desire beautiful, healthy, kind of more youthful appearance, because this is associated again with good health and thriving. And, you know, that's probably important. I mean, I'm not a, sociologist who has studied, you know, the development of human nature over time, but I would say that I do think that it makes sense that one of the reasons that we're kind of so programmed to desire attractive, healthy is that it is associated with something that we want to be, we want to see in our mates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it is true that at least in this day and age, you know, there are people that say, oh, they're going to live to 120 or 140. And that may or may not be true. We were kind of designed to, you know, at some point die off, right? But I think most of us would like to have good health span. I think we'd like to live a full life. You know, a lot of us would like to live to maybe 100 or past 100, but only with good health span. So we want to be healthy. We want to feel good. We want to look good. And I think all of that can be achieved. All of that can be achieved, but it takes a lot of work. So I do have this discussion with patients that it's not this whole aging process is not easy. It requires a ton of work, but what is more important than investing in your health and well-being? When we're sick, you know, if we have the flu or something, all you can think about it is, boy, I just appreciate when I'm healthy so much, right? And then you get better and you maybe forget how great it feels to be healthy again. But, you know, there's, if we don't have our health, we have nothing. So really, I think that it needs to be a priority for every human being to focus on their health. And, you know, I will say that your health is your responsibility. Yes, we have doctors, we have other people that help take care of us, but we have to be our own advocates and we have to take responsibility for our own health. We can't have everything handed to us. So we need to put the work in. It's our body, it's our life. We need to make the effort. And if you do things right, it generally pays off. It pays off. You have better quality of life. You feel better. You look better. And you are better, quite frankly.
You know, and you hear things that people say, no, well, you know, if you look at the studies and those that have, you know, lived this clean, healthy lifestyle, live a year or two longer than those that did. No. So why am I doing it? Why am I giving up my bad lifestyle and my choices of drinking or smoking, the things that we know that are damaging for another year or two? And I know my answer to that, which is that person who is focusing daily on their health is living more with more energy, with more vitality, with less aches and pains on a daily basis. Is that kind of where you're going with this? Is it's like, you know, yeah, we want to live until we're 100, but we don't want to spend the last 20 years of our life in pain and agony because of what we've been doing leading to that age. There's taking care of things on a daily basis so that the quality of life is extended.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And it's probably more than a year or two of longer life if you take care of yourself. I won't, you know, all kinds of things can happen. And sometimes there's bad luck. We get hit by a car or something. We die earlier. But we want every day to be as the best quality possible. And I agree. You know, when one does not take care of oneself, I mean, these insidious symptoms start up. There's aches, there are pains, there are, you know, you just don't look as good in the mirror. The whole quality of the time spent is much, much poorer. When people talk about, well, I really want that chocolate cake because why live longer if I can't enjoy the chocolate cake? Well, quite frankly, when you have a healthy diet, healthy lifestyle, you know, you have, like you said, more energy, you feel better. Actually, a lot of these foods just taste better and better and better to you because the brain starts to connect these healthy dietary choices with feeling better. It really does change the way your taste perception is. You know, I discussed that processed food, unfortunately, is highly, highly addictive. It really doesn't taste good. People start to think it tastes good because they've got gut microbiota that are sending a message to the brain. And these are bad actors. These are bad actors that are sending a little message to the brain. Oh, you want that bag of chips. You want, you know, whatever garbage is your guilty pleasure. But they will actually create cravings in your brain for you. You get rid of those. And it's like, I think it's like the ex-smoker who maybe says, I don't know how I ever smoked. I can't even stand the smell of a cigarette now. I think that with junk food, it's a similar thing. You think it tastes so good for a while, you know, you're a cola addict or something, and you really want that soda, and you get away from it, and all of a sudden you think, my gosh, how did I ever drink that? That was disgusting. That just tasted vile. So our tastes definitely will change. And I think, you know, nutritious food supplements, they just taste better, quite frankly. They really, really do. But you have to get rid of those bad actors in the gut that are trying to convince your brain otherwise.
Wow. Now, and again, I'm trying to find the easy route here in terms of supplements, because I know I'm really big on supplements. So what advice to listeners and viewers would you have in terms of, you know, the in just adding supplements that will make a difference?
Yeah. So, I mean, I personally take quite a few supplements. Not a lot, not mega doses of anything, like I said. But with regards to, you know, the skin, the hair, the nails, I think there are, and these are the kind of the most common things that I discuss with regards to supplements. So I discuss some things that will increase the collagen in the skin. And a lot of what I see, you know, people come in with thinning hair, with graying hair. There's a lot of evidence that a lot of these changes are due to, yes, hormonal changes. So adding supplements that will block, in appropriate cases, if somebody, you know, don't want to do this in pregnant women, obviously, but pregnant women usually don't have problems with hair thinning. It's in your, you know, postmenopausal female where hair thinning really accelerates, and in males, supplements that can block 5-alpha reductase, so saw palmetto, pumpkin seed extract can be quite helpful. Horsetail extract, horsetail contains some cysteine, which is a building block for the hair. It contains a number of silica, a little bit of biotin, which, by the way, everybody with hair thinning comes in already taking biotin, and so many physicians and other providers will recommend biotin for the hair and nails. And the studies have been pretty conclusive that just adding biotin is not going to help your hair and nails. So I will just put that out there. Unless you have an extremely, extremely poor diet. I mean, it's so hard to be biotin deficient. There are a couple of genetic conditions that can make people biotin deficient. Those are rare. And unless you have one, don't waste your money on supplemental biotin. That's all I'm saying. So concentrate on things like the pumpkin seed extract, a lot of the phytoestrogen sources that I was discussing before, with genistein, dinazine, so your legumes, a lot of plant sources actually have precursors. And then adding in coenzyme Q10, which seems to help microcirculation, probably helps the cellular energy of the cells in the hair papilla that is kind of forming hair. There's a peptide called HK copper, which is most helpful with GHK copper. GHK copper, by the way, has benefit on hair, I mean, skin, virtually every cell in the body, quite frankly. But HK copper added to that can be very helpful for hair stimulation, can be helpful for the bones, can be helpful for excessive weight. By the way, a lot of these plant sterols, believe it or not, can help with that, those changes, those postmenopausal changes that women don't like, with the increasing girth of the midsection, for instance, and kind of keeping a little more shapely figure. So for the hair, there is another supplement called MSM, methyl sulfonyl something or other, that is found in joint supplements. And that actually, again, is very cysteine rich. It helps with these disulfide bonds, which help both hair and nails. That is a go-to for hair and nails. So we need a good milieu in the hair follicle to keep these stem cells from basically going into apoptosis, like dying off. Additionally, I think a lot of adaptogens can be helpful. Ashwagandha, I didn't mention before, but ashwagandha has some good adaptogenic activity. It also helps with some of our stress cortisol effect that is causing a deleterious effect. It is true that a lot of times when people undergo significant stress with a variety of things in life, hair can start falling out. And of course, stress management is important, but some adaptogens, ashwagandha, can be quite helpful in that situation. Maca, other plant sterols, again, very helpful with hair. Red clover, I hadn't mentioned before, but red clover also has, that's a legume, has genistein and didazine, and has been shown in clinical in studies to help with hair, bones, a lot of things that kind of accelerate in a deleterious way postmenopausally. The nails, I do like collagen supplements, MSM, horsetail extract. Those are all helpful with hair. Well, excuse me, with hair and nails, quite frankly. Yes.
So as a last, to wrap things up a little bit here, we've covered so many things, and I know we could go on for days about just all of the things we can do as humans to improve our health, our life, our microbiome. Any last words? Is there anything we didn't cover in this episode that you
Okay. We
like?
probably didn't cover a lot of things. Human body is so complex. I think we've scraped the surface, and we're still learning. I think the wonderful thing is that there is more and more information coming out. There is more and more focus on a lot of these kind of what I'll call more natural substances. The other thing I would say, the one re with regards to supplementation. So I think supplements have a very good place. However, I will say that one does need to be wary. I would purchase from a reputable company. There's some variability with regard to the quality of the substance in the product. And sometimes, even some of these products maybe contain more or less of what they say. We don't have optimal doses. Like any medication, well, there can be basically supplement drug interactions. So be wary of those. There can be, like with a lot of things, you can overdose. So there can be deleterious effects with very high doses, mega doses of anything. So I would recommend avoiding kind of trying to, mega dose on anything. But slow and steady kind of wins the race with supplements and with nutrition. Think about, I would work with a knowledgeable healthcare provider. So a lot of people try to kind of self-medicate, and these supplements are available, in pharmacies and on the internet and what have you without prescriptions, without any supervision. But don't be afraid to talk to your healthcare provider, your trusted healthcare provider, about what you are taking. Do include these in your medication list, because again, some of these can have interactions with basically liver enzymes that are breaking down other medications, so that it can affect those levels. And I think that, but they can be very useful. They can be very helpful. Natural doesn't mean healthy, but there are a lot of things in nature that can be used that have, you know, in supplementation and food sources, I think that can be quite beneficial. So, you know, starting slow, working with a professional, somebody who's knowledgeable in these areas, I think is super, super important.
Well, I think, you know, for many of us and most of us, we'd like to live a life with medication free, if possible. But for those that are on medication, I agree with you. Do talk to your healthcare provider to make sure that there is any, you know, unnecessary interaction with the natural botanicals, with the prescription medication that you take in. And then I do think, you know, as well, there's a lot of physicians in functional medicine that do really recommend the more natural supplements for inflammation and other things that also do have the background in prescription medication understanding. So yeah, absolutely agree with you. There's many things out there, and it's easy to say, you know, we don't just, you know, overdose on supplement, but if the person doesn't understand what that means, you know, because a small amount in one person could make it, could have an impact that you don't want them to have a negative impact, because the whole goal here is to help them just reduce inflammation, improve the microbiome, and therefore improve their entire health.
Absolutely. And I think more will come out with regard to optimal dosing, having a little more standardized dosing. Supplemental, though, highly unregulated. Some are actually kind of examined by the FDA. So there is, the FDA does play a role in some supplements, not all. I think it depends on the company and their desire actually to have things checked for basically quality and consistency. But we, you know, people come in many different shapes and sizes. So just like a medication, what may be appropriate for somebody who's, you know, 240 pounds may not be appropriate dosing for, you know, somebody like me who is a little smaller, right?
Yeah. Okay, so a last word, is there any anecdotal story, patient experience, or anything, any last words for our listeners?
Oh my goodness. So I will say, well, yes. Gosh, there are so many stories. I'm not even sure where to begin. But I do often, I guess, use, you know, melasma, which is a very difficult to treat problem where women get hyperpigmentation, but very irregular hyperpigmentation. So patches, it's also called the mask of pregnancy. That can be just devastating. And I have had patients where, of course, I do use lightening agents, sometimes procedures in the office, but the addition of some of these products like pycnogenol or supplements, pycnogenol, adding genistein, I think can be very, very life-changing. And just having, you know, patients in the office who are literally in tears because they've seen, you know, a dozen providers before me. And this is finally kind of the first thing that has really tipped them over the edge. Just, you know, it's very rewarding when we can use basically Western medicine and marry that with, you know, other lifestyle and supplemental practices that can really, really be helpful and make people feel better, make people look better. And, you know, it's just very, very gratifying to have somebody in the office in front of you whose life has been changed so dramatically because, you know, we're able to think outside the box.
Well, Serena, thank you so much for being on the Aesthetic Insider Show. As always, it's such a pleasure. You're so interesting, intriguing, and filled with so much information.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Angela.
Absolutely. And for those of you still with us, remember to watch next Wednesday for another exciting episode of the Aesthetic Insider Show. Look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you.